we tell you about Public Square? There are several lines that meet other edges.
Youth of this country who are already in a disillusioned, disenchanted state will be encouraged.
Where we talk about the fine margins. Sometimes it's black, white, and blurry.
It's also informed by the need to save costs and reduce legislative time.
Then there are the actors right at the center, coming through political processes, which could be dramatic.
To the extent of this man, if Parliament does not rise this morning.
And controversial.
If driving through the roads is a getting the macabre done, compatibility is that of government.
And there's you to help connect the dots from the top to the bottom. Join Rotimi Sankore and Arogo Obo at the Public Square every Friday from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. 99.3 Nigeria Info.
Ladies and gentlemen,
this is the Public Square.
And they say Shaku Maku, everybody. It's a brilliant, hot and humid Friday afternoon in the city of Lagos. And you're on to Public Square on 99.3 Nigeria Info. And we have a big show coming up from now all the way till 6 p.m. At 6 p.m., as you're aware, we don't have the news happen because of the coverage of the World Cup qualifier, crucial World Cup qualifier. And the finest gang in town will be in from 6 p.m. For live pre-match analysis all the way till the kickoff, which is at 8:30. So a lot for you to listen to beginning from now on the Public Square, which is the last Friday of the Women's Month. Today's edition of Public Square is focusing on an issue that potentially affects half of most societies. And sadly, that issue is gender-based violence. We'll be reviewing a new book on how to report on gender-based violence. I've had a look at this book, and I think it's something that we should all pay careful attention to. It's been published by our colleagues at the Center for Journalism, Innovation and Development, formerly Premium Times Center for Investigative Journalism. Ms. Busola Ajibola is a Deputy Director of Journalism Program at the CJID, which stands for the Center for Journalism, Innovation and Development. She'll be joining us to talk about the book, and I see she's already up. And help us to situate and contextualize the problem. We also have one of Nigeria's longest-standing advocates to end gender-based violence, Josephine Efa Chukwuma. She's the editor of Project Alert on Violence Against Women. Mrs. Efa Chukwuma will join in at some point, but it'd be great to have her join. It's been a while we had Efa Chukwuma in the Public Square. Looking forward to discussing with her. And then at the top of the hour, Rotimi Sankore, who happens to be one of the authors and contributor to the book, will join for some big picture analysis. Remember, you can join, engage with us on the program on Twitter at Nigeria Info FM, at Public Square NG, at Rotimi Sankore, at Arogo Obo. On WhatsApp, the number to send us messages, questions you want to contribute to the discussion is 08095975805. Again, 08095975805. This is also being streamed live on Facebook as well as on YouTube at Nigeria Info FM. Great to have Busola Ajibola join us this evening.
Good afternoon. I'm so happy to be here. Please let me put on my video.
Excellent. And happy to have you join us in the square.
Thank you so much for having me. The pleasure is mine.
Excellent. So let's get into the nitty-gritty of the matter. There are several things we're going to have to unwrap here. So first and foremost, I'm going to keep saying CJID, which is the Center for Journalism, Innovation and Development. So I'll just abbreviate that so that I don't have to have a mouthful every time I say that. So why does CJID think it's important to publish a book or a handbook which reports on gender-based violence?
Thank you so much. I hope I got that name correctly.
You did very well. 10 over 10.
Thank you. over the years, we have monitored generally how the media reports gender issues, not just in Nigeria, but in in West Africa. And we realize, you know, which then formed our hypothesis. The media reportage of gender issues, you know, generally fall below sensitivity standards. Most journalists, you know, and I say this with a deep sense of modesty, you know, are not familiar with ethics that guide, you know, the reportage of gender issues, you know, the sensitivity that it requires, the need not to stereotype, you know, the need not to, you know, victim blame, the need to report GBV as and general gender inequality issues as a social issue, not just as, you know, episodic event. So this formed our hypothesis. So, but nonetheless, you know, we know that the media reports gender. So then the argument would be, oh, but we then report gender. So we went from that hypothesis to then say, okay, to understand how the media reports GBV, let us conduct some form of survey on journalists to understand their own individual perspective of what GBV entails. And we came up with some very interesting responses. You know, we realized from the responses that we conducted on, I think, about over 100 journalists in Nigeria, you know, that journalists, you know, are actually guilty of, you know, victim blaming. When we asked what the causes of gender-based violence was, I mean, some journalists told us that it is because women struggle for jobs and for political appointments, you know. They had said indecency or indecent dressing. They had said movements, at unwarranted movement. So, you know, there's a problem when journalists themselves begin to attribute causes of GBV, you know, to those kind of causes. So from then, we then say, oh, okay, so it's time to, you know, prepare a document that can educate journalists on the concept of GBV itself, how to better report it, you know, and then and that's what we that's what we did, and so that's why we thought it's important to put the document together, and we are thankful to the Ford Foundation and to the Australian High Commission for supporting us to achieve this mission of ours.
Excellent. It's always great to have a mirror before yourself and look in the mirror and see where the problem is before we point fingers at the other actors. So I'm glad that we began from our own constituency to see that there's a lot of confusion even with journalists in reporting GBV. But what issues do this book cover, Busola?
So it's a 272 pages document. A little bit bulky, but again, most of the content, you know, that attributes to that bulkiness is we actually put the direct responses that we got from journalists, so they can, like you said, a mirror, and then we had the collation of, you know, because we know that jobs of journalists sometimes go beyond, you know, just reporting, but. So we had a we compiled referral centers. So if journalists, you know, encounter people, survivors, and then they probably need to book referral. So yeah, but mainly the book contains, we had 15 chapters, which were, you know, in some cases co-authored by some other people. So we had the first chapter talks about the survey, a snap analysis of our survey.
Good.
Then we have chapters that talks about that deep conceptual analysis of GBV. We have chapters that talk about the need to move beyond episodic reporting to thematic reporting, you know. So don't just report GBV as isolated cases, but see the bigger picture of what the causes are, the impacts are on the society. We have a chapter on the ethical imperatives that is required. We have another chapter that dissects intersectionality of GBV with other social inequities. We have a chapter about how journalists can prioritize the safety of survivors. And then we moved, you know, because the authors are also from West African region. So this is not just a document that is useful in Nigeria. So we have chapters that also talk about reporting women in conflict zones. We also have a chapter which was contributed by our own Mr. Rotimi Sankore on how you know, journalists can navigate constraints in audiovisual reporting. Mm. And for the last chapter, we talked about data. There's a chapter two that speaks to data gathering and collation. Mm. And then we have a chapter that is dedicated to a need for journalists to stay on the story, you know, which adopts a rush strategy, which is report until something happens. Follow the reportage, not just, and don't abandon them at breaking news. Follow them to, you know, response phases, medical experiences of survivors. What are the experiences in the judicial processes? You know, how do response agencies, the police, NAPTI, what are the experiences of survivors? So, yeah, it's 15 chapters of, you know, qualities and content that promises to improve how we report gender-based violence across West Africa.
Excellent. And I'm really glad of the different topics that have been mentioned here. And I do hope that going forward, we can look at our fellow colleagues in how they report these stories. And there's a remarkable difference in what we read or get to see in the electronic media. You know, gender-based violence is mainly against women. But does this book also address the violence against men in certain cases?
Yeah, so we have some, you know, segment that, you know, that broadly talks about gender-based violence and what it entails. We have data, you know, that data tells us, you know, that anyone can actually be a victim of gender-based violence. So it's not really, you know, gender-based. But again, data has also showed us that women and girls are more susceptible. Yeah. So yeah, a lot of focus, you know, following from what we know, but focus on how the issue affects mostly men and, I mean, women and girls. Yeah. But the handbook provides a broader view of how journalists can actually report gender-based violence, irrespective of the gender that is involved. So whether it is a man or it is a woman or it is a girl or it's a, in fact, there is a whole chapter that we dedicate to how to report children. You know, so it can be a boy and can be a girl. And we now know that one in every 10 boys, you know, would experience gender-based violence. We hope that data does not increase. But yes, this handbook can help in reporting GBVs as it affects people of all gender.
Absolutely. In case you just joined the conversation on the Public Square 99.3 Nigeria Info, it's the Women's Month, as you're aware, and we have focused a lot on the issues which concern women. And today, which is the last Friday of the month, we are talking about gender-based violence, and we have the Deputy Director of Journalism Program, the Center for Journalism and Center for Journalism Innovation and Development, Busola Ajibola, who has been helping us go through this handbook. And the handbook, I'm sure, Busola, it's always the joy of an author in putting out this sort of work. And the question will be, how do you expect this book to be utilized?
So we expect that this handbook will serve as a very, very effective manual, you know, and a training tool that journalists, editors, academics, policymakers, students, and other media professionals will find very, very useful. So beyond just, you know, using this manual or handbook, you know, right, to train journalists and other media gatekeepers, I think anybody who needs a broader understanding of what GBV entails and perhaps even wants to hold the media accountable, or perhaps even needs to know where are the referral centers. So if I've just experienced GBV, where can I go? Anybody who needs this kind of details would need to lay their hands on the book. It is very, very resourceful, even if I say so.
What about the general public? I'm sure they will find a lot of useful things for themselves. And is it possible they can also download the book?
So, yeah, the good thing is the book is available to be downloaded for free on our website, which is thecjid.org. So if anybody goes on our website, thecjid.org, just by the left side of the website, there's a column for publications. Once you click that publication, you see the image of the handbook, and then, yeah, voila, you download and you have a copy.
And also on social media, I can't imagine too.
Yeah. So, well, on social media, we do not have a copy uploaded anywhere on social media. But the good thing is that anyone can reach out to the CJID Twitter handles. That's at CJID Africa, or our Facebook handle, which is at Center for Journalism, Innovation and Development, or our Instagram handle at the CJID, and request that we send an online version of the handbook to them. They can reach out to me. My Twitter handle is at @Busola_Ajibola. And, you know, or they can send an email to us. You just reach out to us, and it's our job. We have this hope that this handbook will be disseminated in all newsrooms, to all journalists, in every spaces, until we see the end to GBV violence. I mean, yeah, gender-based violence in Nigeria, and journalists are able to report it in a way that does not perpetuate the violence.
You know, journalists, what you probably would say, oftentimes want to be the eternal optimist and hope that the issues we do go after, we can find a logical conclusion to, even though most times we don't see it happen, but at least we'll try. And we'll keep reporting and talking about these things until we see something happen. Something you talked about, Rush, that we keep staying on the story until something happens. Got me thinking, like, if we come back next year in the month of March for another Women's Month, I'm sure that you probably will have your scorecard out to say, these are the things which we have seen happen, whether they be the low-hanging fruits or short-term goals, or the beginning of what we see in the long or medium-term goals and objectives. What do you expect to see going forward a year from now when we come back to talk about the Women's Month?
So, one of our very high hopes is that the media in West Africa, in Nigeria inclusive, you know, become more gender responsive. We need to understand that when we talk about gender, gender is not just women. Gender is women, gender is men, gender is girls, gender is boys. And to understand that issues, social issues, economic issues affect people of gender in different manner. And it's important that the way we tell stories, you know, reflect these differences. You know, the way we tell stories does not exclude how these issues affect individuals based on our gender, you know, and that we do not exclude people from solutions. Because when you exclude people from stories, then you're also excluding them from solutions. So we are hoping that the framing and the languages of the media is more sensitive, you know, that media is more intentional about how they report, especially issues that affect women and girls. I mean, all over the place, we see how excluded women are, whether in politics, whether in, you know, decision-making tables. So if, I mean, it takes two legs for a human to stand. And so if we have men and women, and we are not including women as much as we are including men, and we are excluding half of humanity, you know, from solution processes. So generally, by and large, we hope that we would, this conversation would have helped the media to become more responsive in their reportage, not just on GBV, but of gender issues, and that a trickle of that would see a more increase in women participation at, in national discourse, an increase in the number of women even in the newsroom,
right?
An increase in the number of women in our media content, and, you know, and generally a more equal and a more equal society.
I mean, it's such as we bring the discussion to a close, I'm thinking it's such a huge task when you think about the numbers of newsrooms which we have. This will require some sort of training also to, and I can't imagine that if you have 1,000 newsrooms to go, this is why I guess this handbook does a lot of justice and easy work for us. But what about training? Because obviously training should be an essential part of this too.
So the second quarter, third quarter, and, you know, last quarter of this year would see us, you know, doing everything that we can to use this handbook to engage journalists. In fact, we've done one before. We did, I think we did one even when this book was still in its incubation state. That was last year, September. We had used the draft, you know, to engage, I think 21 journalists from 17 media organization from across Nigeria, which cuts across radio, TV, print, online, you know, and the nature of the stories that they told, it was quite impressive, was a shift from what we used to see. And last year, we started with our own sister organization because we had the media and gender program of CGID had engaged 40 editorial members of Premium Times on gender-sensitive reporting. Mm. You know, we are happy to collaborate with newsrooms. You know, we would be glad if newsroom, you know, reach out to us to say, oh, can you please conduct a one-day, a two-day discussion, you know, with us on gender-sensitive reporting, how to report GBV. Mm. We're also looking forward to have organization funders, international organizations, local organizations who are interested and passionate about, you know, the need for us to have an equitable society, reach out to us and support us to use this very important document to engage journalists and, you know, facilitate a general better reportage of not just gender issues, but also gender-based violence issues, which is an extension of gender issues. Mm.
Finally, before I let you go, it's the month for the women. It's been a very eventful month. Women occupying the National Assembly and all of those bills. But if you had 30 seconds, what would your message be to men and women in this wonderful country called Nigeria?
Let's do this, not just for the generation behind, but for the generations coming. Gender equality is something that we all must make happen. Mm. We must make it happen because there are not just men existing. There are men, there are women. And I don't know, we can all just sit down right now and imagine what a world without men would be, what a world without women would be. If we can think of what it would be, then we would see a need for us to ensure that we are including every gender in all phases of our existence. It is non-negotiable. It is what we must do.
All right. We're going to have to leave it at that. Thank you very much, Busola Ajibola, Deputy Director, Center for Journalism Innovation and Development, which is formerly Premium Times Center for Investigative Journalism. It's a pleasure having spoken with you.
Thank you so much for having me. Thank you.
Excellent. All right, we're going to go on a quick break. We come back. We still have Josephine Efa Chukwuma. She hasn't joined in yet, but we do hope she can join in. There's still Rotimi Sankore still to come. Please stay with us on 99.3 Nigeria Info.
Listening to your number one station for talk.
Your number one station for talk.
99.3 Nigeria Info. Let's talk.
Ladies and gentlemen,
this is the Public Square.
Oh, welcome back. 99.3 Nigeria Info and the Public Square. It's up and running, and we've gone already one discussion, another one to go, and we have not been able to connect with Josephine Efa Chukwuma, who's the executive director of Project Alert on violence against women. She's actually got a very packed out schedule, and we thought we could squeeze her in, but appears she's still caught up with what she's done. In case you missed the beginning part of the show, we've already spoken with Busola Ajibola, who is the Deputy Director Journalism Program at the Center for Journalism Innovation and Development. And we did talk about a number of things. That handbook on gender-based violence, especially for journalists, and how to report. So Rotimi Sankore has joined in. Rotimi Sankore, data journalist development expert. Of course, he's also a contributor in this book, Gender-Based Violence, as well as co-host of Public Square. Rotimi.
Yeah.
Excellent. And we've had to do this special on gender-based violence in this Women's Month, and it just made sense we have this discussion, Rotimi.
Yeah, I mean, very sadly, you know, we have to have this discussion. Mm. I mean, it's a discussion I wish we didn't have to have.
Yes.
But anything that affects roughly half of our society is worth discussing anytime, every time. Mm. You know, anytime, every time. It is worth discussing. I mean, some people ask me sometimes, Public Square discusses a lot of gender equality and women's rights. I said, yes, it's half of our society. Mm. I mean, what else is more important to discuss than half of the society? So, sadly, I wish there was no gender-based violence. As we say in the promo, it's an obstacle to women's and girls' aspirations, opportunities, rights, development. In fact, it is an obstacle to the establishment of a proper human civilization. Mm. I mean, that's just the truth of it. Mm. We talk historically about the days of transatlantic slave trade.
Very true.
When slavers with a few local collaborators would come and, snatch Africans to go and work on the slave plantations and cane them and hang them. Mm. Our ancestors, that is. Now, there are forms of modern slavery, and most of it is gender-based. Mm. So, the nuances are changing. But essentially, the repression, the exploitation, the slavery, it still continues in a gender form. And what is really dangerous is that in many societies, it is seen as normal, as the way it should be. Mm. Which it shouldn't be, which is why the media has to improve the way it is reported, which is why the colleagues at the CJID published the handbook, and I was very honored to be invited to be one of the authors.
It does make a lot of sense, Rotimi. So we'll have to get into the talking point. I think the earlier we get into, the better for us. So we begin with the objectives of gender-based violence. What exactly is it?
In reporting on gender-based violence, or even just as a member of society, not a member of the media, it's important to see the big picture, that the overall goal of gender-based violence is social, political, and economic control. Mm. That's what most violence is aimed at. And in this case, the big picture is that perpetrators of violence use it to control. That's the long and short of it. Now, it is often nuanced, and there is a broad spectrum. So, when someone says to a woman, his partner, his wife, I order you not to go out. implied is that if you go out, your eye will see where. Mm-hmm. Now that is in the context of what is called, euphemistically domestic violence or intimate partner violence. Mm. But you can also see it expressed in other ways. When a young girl is told, if you read too much, you know, go get husband. What is being implied there is that the more educated you are, the more aware you are, the more you are able to negotiate for your rights and for your development. Mm. And therefore, if you read too much, no man will be interested in somebody that is self-aware. Mm. And therefore, you need to diminish yourself as a human being. Diminish yourself to be under somebody that can control you. So you see now it has moved to the intellectual space. Mm. Because if you are able to talk back, first of all, you may not get somebody, but if you get somebody, you may see where there. So, that broad spectrum, it is really nuanced and really dangerous. But let me just talk about a few issues that may help enlighten more. So, in political science, social psychology, it is well understood that the fusion of religion and the state leads to what you have in Afghanistan with the Taliban. And that the fusion of racial ideology with the state leads to what you had in apartheid South Africa, or even in the U.S. before the civil rights movement of the 50s, 60s, and 70s, you know, led by people like Martin Luther King, Malcolm X, and so forth like that. So people understand what happens when you fuse religious ideology or racial ideology with the state. A lot of people don't understand what happens when you fuse patriarchy with the state. A lot of people don't understand it because it is assumed that, you know, the state needs to be patriarchal. But if you look at the advanced countries, the more economically and socially developed countries, one of the hallmarks of those countries is that they separated patriarchy from the state. So if you look at all these countries that are at the top of all the indexes, I mean, the World Happiness Index, for instance, is topped regularly by countries like Finland, Sweden, Denmark, Canada, and so forth like that. I mean, they are the top because half of the society is happier. The positive peace index, that is the countries that have the sustainable conditions for peace, it is the same countries. You are unlikely in those countries to see Boko Haram kidnapping 400 schoolgirls and the government acts as if nothing happened until they are put under pressure. You know, the countries at the top of the terrorism index, it is gender linked. Why? Because girls and women are prevented from going to school, prevented from working, and their reproductive health is regularly violated to the point that they are forced to breed a lot of young men that are then used as the foot soldiers of extremism. So where there is greater, you know, gender-based violence, you will find that those countries also tend to have more foot soldiers for terrorism, because the sexual and reproductive health of girls have been violated from when they were 12, 13, 14, like that. So there is almost no index of human development that you will look at where you will not see that those at the bottom is where gender inequality is high. And of course, gender-based violence is the nuclear option for gender equality. If you don't behave yourself, as they say on the streets, you collect. And if you see the role of the state, like in Nigeria, I mean, the penal code gives cover to gender-based violence. That's why I say you have to separate patriarchy from the state. The Nigerian penal code says you can chastise your wife as far as the grievous bodily harm is not too serious. In other words, you can beat as far as, you know, but what exactly does that mean? That the state is failing to protect half of the society from physical violence, which can result in death. In fact, I mean, thousands of girls and women are regularly murdered by people who profess to love them. And the state does not play its role to defend those girls and women. Now, if you look at all those discriminatory negative practices, forced child marriage, we talk about it all the time, family-based violence, you know, in some countries, this idea that a girl or woman has, that the person's behavior has impacted on the honor of the family. You know, the person wore trousers, the person went out in the evening, was seen talking with boys, and therefore has to be beaten, you know, for the family honor to be protected. You know, all these assumptions that girls and women are somehow commodities. So, I mean, that essentially, you know, is the big picture of it. You know, exploitation, trafficking. You know, even when girls and women go to some markets, you see, you know, boys pulling them, grabbing them under the guise of, you can come into my shop, kind of a thing, you know. I mean, young men essentially acting like monkeys, you know. So, or is it the religious or superstitious belief that some women are witches and that the witchcraft needs to be beaten out of them? I mean, not a exclusively Nigerian problem. The, the phrase witch hunt comes from the U.S. some centuries ago, where outspoken women essentially were burnt at the stake by nice Christian gentlemen and so forth like that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if you look at that big picture, you start to see, you know, the reason for gender-based violence. So the state has to be separated from patriarchy so that the state can play its role in protecting half the society. And the media has to report it as such so that people have a broader understanding of why it happens. Because without that, somebody will beat you, then you will be asked, you two, what did you do? Then people will be urging you to kneel down and beg the person for beating you.
Right. All right, Ritchie, we will go on a break, and there's still a lot to talk about, the role of the state and, like you've mentioned, and the institutions also, to how they have enabled gender-based violence. We'll spread eagle this problem and then find out just how terrible their roles have been and what sort of factors have led to this continuing. There's still also to how we raise children, male and female, that they can have zero tolerance for gender-based violence. The Public Square, the last Friday of the Women's Month, and we are looking at gender-based violence. There's still audience participation to happen at the top of the hour when we come back. So a lot more for us to look at. Still, stick with us at 99.3 Nigeria Info. Let's talk.
Let me tell you about Public Square. There are several lines that meet other edges.
Youth of this country who are already in a dissolution, disenchanted state, will be encouraged.
Where we talk about the fine margin. Sometimes it's black, white, and blurry.
It's also informed by the need to save costs and reduce legislative time.
Then there are the actors right at the center, coming through political processes, which could be dramatic.
To the extent of this man, if Parliament does not raise this money.
And controversial.
If driving through the roads is a getting the macabre, compatibility is that of government.
And there's you to help connect the dots from the top to the bottom. Join Rotimi Sankore and Arogo Obo at the Public Square every Friday from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. 99.3 Nigeria Info.
Ladies and gentlemen,
this is the Public Square.
All right, welcome back, Public Square, 99.3 Nigeria Info. And it's the gender-based violence discussion we're having the last Friday of the month for women, and we have had big discussions throughout this month. Remember, you can join the discussion on Public Square at 99.3 Nigeria Info FM, on Twitter at Public Square NG, at Rotimi Sankore, at Awo Obo. Send us messages on WhatsApp 0809-597-5805. All right, Rotimi, we have still some work to do before we get the audience into the square. In this episode of the Public Square.
Yes, we are going to talk about the role of the states.
Yes.
Before the rather longish commercial break kicked in.
Yes, exactly.
Yes, but these are the perils of commercial radio, which is why it's best to have sponsored programs. Anyway, so, on the question of the role of the state, let me use this Section 84 as an example. If you have just landed from the moon and you don't know what Section 84 is, it's the part of the amended Electoral Act which bars appointed political appointees from being involved in activities leading to or aimed at getting them elected as party officials or otherwise.
Right.
So, under this Section 84, a whole lot of ministers, for instance, in the federal government, or commissioners at the state level, or advisors of whatever party, whether they are PDP, APC, APGA, otherwise, essentially would be barred from playing a role in party primaries, seeking for office and so forth.
Very true.
Now, you can see the way the Attorney General jumped into the matter.
Mm.
Because self-interest is clearly involved. And the President asked the National Assembly to remove Section 84 so that the political appointees can participate, including and up to the mischief of going to somewhere in Umuahia, which, I mean, for me, I find very comical. I mean, many people know I went to Government College Umuahia. So, I mean, the idea that somebody will go from Abuja to Umuahia to go and get, a court order, to strike down Section 84 of the Constitution. Now you can see how active the executive is, President, Attorney General, everybody jumping up and down. Now, have we ever seen the executive, President, Attorney General, Minister of Education, and so forth, have we ever, or even at the state levels, well, with the possible exception of my old colleague, Wale Fakuhonda, son, who is Attorney General in Ekiti State. I worked with him in CLO in the early 90s. So he's a human rights lawyer, now masquerading as an Attorney General. he took action on behalf of police women that were discriminated against by the states. Now, with the possible exception of that, how many of the 36 state attorney general or, cabinet and the federal level, have you seen taking action like that to protect girls and women? To uphold their... have you seen them intervening to say... did the executive intervene at the national level to say, that part of the constitution that renders women stateless
right.
Is an affront to the part of the constitution that says that nobody will be discriminated against on the basis of ethnicity, religion, or gender. They didn't intervene. They are certainly not intervening to protect girls from the most comprehensive form of gender-based violence, which is first child marriage, which involves everything from sexual violation at the age of 9, 10, 11, 12, to imprisonment, false imprisonment in a home, to the curtailment of your rights to movement, association, political participation, inflicting on you as a girl child pregnancy that can lead to your death, and so forth. Have we seen them intervene in things like that? No. So this is supposed to be the role of the state. And therefore, the state is failing to intervene to protect half the society from gender-based violence. In places like Lagos, when there are clear-cut cases of gender-based violence, because of the bigger social and economic weight of women, the government feels it has to respond. I mean, the case of the lady that was murdered after being a BRT passenger. You can see the state government, making moves, trying to be responsive and so forth like that. Because of the relative social and economic weight of women in Lagos.
Very true.
But broadly speaking, the state does not act unprompted. And that is what we want. The state should be able to act unprompted. The Attorney General of the Federation and the Attorney General of the 36 states, key sectors like education and so forth, all these sectors should be able to intervene unprompted to protect girls and women from discrimination and violence. That should be the role of the state. The state is not playing its role. The state is failing to play its role. And this has to change for Nigeria to make progress. Because Nigeria cannot advance until half the society is free from violence. Because the violence impedes aspiration, opportunity, actualization of talent. And all these things are important in their own right, but they also have positive consequences for the society. Really positive consequences. All those countries people want to japa to. Right. If you go to Canada, you will behave yourself there. Yeah. I'm not saying there's no gender-based violence, but the states will deal with you if you go out of your way to inflict such on women and girls.
Right.
So, and therefore, the society is more developed.
Right. So, Rotimi, we've been able to look at the state, whether it's at federal or state level, and the institutions, whether it's with the judiciary. We've scattered a little around the assemblies also too. What about individual men? They make up a large chunk of the actors here, and they have roles also to play.
Yes. So now we need to strike the balance here.
Right.
If every single man in Nigeria or in every civil or in every country in the world was an active perpetrator of gender-based violence, I mean, the world as we know it would be intolerable for girls and women.
Very true.
So while the majority, outstanding majority of perpetrators of gender-based violence are men, it is not all men. So it shows that there is hope. In any case, that is where we want to get to. We want to get to the point where all men understand that patriarchy needs to be separated from the state, and that individual men should stop playing the role of policemen of patriarchy. That is really the big picture. Because a lot of men are playing that role without realizing that that is how they have been indoctrinated to use violence to control women on behalf of patriarchy. I mean, the fact that they don't know means that they assume that it is a natural state of things. Hence, you see them, you know, shouting at women, you know, they talk. Or you see a woman driving in traffic, something goes wrong, and you hear this crass comment, ah, now woman self. You know, all this kind of, you know, behavior. So, you know, a lot of re-education has to go on for individual men, which is part of what we are doing now. People need to realize that discrimination is not necessary. It does not advance you. In fact, it diminishes you as a human being to feel that you have to discriminate against somebody else, repress somebody else, inflict violence on somebody else for you to stay ahead. It diminishes you as a human being. We should raise everybody, including girls and women. And that is why we say women's rights are human rights, because women are humans. The idea that you can, you know, you say you stand for human rights, but not for women. I mean, how? It just doesn't work. So I always appeal to men. It is not necessary. It is not important. Girls and women are not taking away anything from you by rising. In fact, the whole society will rise together. And that is why I always give the economic example. Any part of the world where women are most repressed is the most poverty-stricken, the most backward part of the world or any country.
Right.
So, it is a fact.
A massive
fact. You know, men should stop being afraid that you know, women's rights are going to impact on them. No.
Right. And they wrote to me that a number of things we have to unlearn and then relearn also too, which is about how the male child and the female child are being raised. Before we go into the audience.
Yes, so, yes. I mean, this question of gender roles.
Exactly.
I mean, things that are survival skills are passed off as gender roles. Yeah. For instance, learning to cook.
Uh-huh.
This is a survival role. I mean, you know, I mean, this is a survival skill.
Uh-huh.
How did it become a gender role? You know?
Mm.
I mean, learning to wash your clothes, to clean up, tidy up after you.
Mm.
These are survival skills. Now, by making all these things gender roles, it means that it is assumed that this is the work of girls and women. And therefore, if they don't do it, they have to be policed into doing it. So you hear things like, if you go and work, who will look after the children?
Mm.
You, the father, what are you doing? Are you not a parent to the children?
Mm-hmm.
Can't you look after your children? Can't you teach your children? Can't you play with your children? Can't you take them to school?
Mm.
And so forth like that. So, I mean, all these things that are given as, in quotes, vague excuses for gender-based violence. You are not looking after your children. You are going to go and gossip with your friends. This guy talking spends most evenings at the pepper soup joint. He's not reflecting on himself.
Oh, dear.
You know, so when they pass all these things to the children, the children then grow up assuming that this is the way life should be. Then you see girls, they start to censor themselves. You know, they don't want to read too much. They said they won't find husband and so forth like that. Whereas, anytime you see a high-achieving woman like Ngozi Okonjo or Amina Mohammed, Deputy General of United Nations, or Kamala Harris, VP of United States, you see them say, ah, yes, yes, that woman, you know, she don't try. Why can't that be your daughter or your wife or your sister?
Mm-hmm.
Why not?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the values we impart, the values we share, you know, all these things are really important. And really, once we start to share and impart the right values, you will start to realize that, you know, the need for the violence to police girls and women becomes unnecessary. I mean, look at the I Beg to Differ that Nigeria Info has been running.
Right.
Last year, two girls came first and second.
Right.
This year, the same.
Mm.
I mean, you mean you as a listener now, you wouldn't be delighted if that was your daughter coming home with the 1 million naira.
Very true. and it's been great imagining that, not even imagine, listening to people not even bothered whether it was male or female who was in the finals. All they were just interested was the intellect being displayed.
Yes.
Children, so
yes.
It shows that even the girl child will do well also too, irrespective of the space. So Ruth, I think we're going to go on this break now. It's quite a long break. When we come back, having covered all of the angles for this discussion, we can have the audience interact with us once we're back from the break. We'll let you into all of the details, but you can go on social media at Nigeria Info FM, at Public Square NG, at Rotimi Sankore, at our Obo to send the messages, comments. We'll take them. Also on WhatsApp, it's 0809-597-5805. Again, 0809-597-5805. I will let you into the lines to call into the studio once we're back from the break. 99.3 Nigeria Info. Let's talk.
The Public Square.
Oh, welcome back. 0700-993-993-993-993. How many times did I say that? But it's three times. 0700-993-993-993 is the number to call us with. And the line for the women to call in is 01465-7190. Again, 01465-7190. We take in We're taking your calls now, so let's hear what you have to say. Ruth, you're still with us.
Yes, yes.
All right.
Please, so, we always say that women listeners are not prevented from calling the 993-993-993.
Exactly. I let them know also, too. So even if you're a woman, you can call the line.
You can call any of the lines.
Yes, but...
Yes.
But our
affirmative action...
Yes.
...is that can the male callers please refrain from calling the female line, since more men intervene in radio shows.
Yes.
And the reason is obvious. The men are not playing their role in looking after children. So our women listeners are from work, running to pick up children from the creche, going home to cook, and so on and so forth. Not that they don't want to call. They are listening, no? But the men are not pulling their weight with errands and other things.
Right, right. All right, so let's get into it now. We have... our work cut out for us with the calls. Hello and good evening.
Hello.
Great to have you join us. What's your name, please, and where are you calling from?
My name is Ekene Eze.
Ekene, you got your device at the background. We can get feedback from you.
Oh, let me open it.
Okay. And then he switched off his phone. Let me try call back. Hello and good evening.
Hello, good evening, Agogo.
Great to have you join us. What's your name, please, and where are you calling from?
Maku,
please go ahead.
You know, when a man doesn't know how to break cola nuts, he should never be made a red card chief. The problem in Nigeria is that you have made those that cannot do something as simple as breaking cola nuts, you have made them red card chief. You know, thank you, Roti Misankore. When I listen to you, I have hope. Because let us make data-driven decisions. Do you understand? This is not about region, it's not about party, it's about facts. You know, like Sandra Isekwe Selim say, this is hard facts. It's not your emotion. So I think, just to commend you, I'm not here, I cannot teach my teacher because I'm learning so much and I think everything he says is in order. Just to commend you to keep on doing a good work. Some of us are listening and are nodding our head that there's a future for this country because of people like you on radio. And thank you to Nigerian for doing what you do. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you very much, MI. And hello and good evening.
Hello.
Great to have you join us. Your name, please, and where are you calling from?
Good evening.
Evening.
This is Pastor Ladipo calling from Orilegon.
All right, Pastor Ladipo, go ahead, please.
I think my take on this matter is that if we are going to get things right in terms of the female, whatever we are discussing today, the best thing we need to start from the political system. The timing of those year meetings are very odd. If they can change it, more women will participate. I'm telling you. Then lastly, we should give female children priority in everything we do. It will also encourage them to come out well. For me, that is just my own contribution. Thank you and God bless Nigeria.
All right. Thank you very much, Pastor Ladipo. Hello and good evening. Hello and good evening. All right. This isn't going through, but keep the calls coming in. 0700-993-993-993. And then the female line, 01465-7190. Remember, you can talk to us on social media at Nigeria Info FM at Public Square NG, as well as on WhatsApp 0809-597-5805. Chooks from Ikeja says that the AGF is simply playing in on we all wings. How do I mean? It's simply acting like the minister in charge of all the ministries out of self-centered or ulterior motives. I think this is in response to what he had said. But I like this one he writes also too, wrote me. He says that society that treats girls differently simply being evil and can never develop. Instead, it is digging the grave of such society, and those behind such barbaric practices in most cases send their children to the best schools overseas while depriving the children of the poor and same opportunity, like today in Afghanistan, where the words of the leaders of the Taliban in Doha, Qatar, getting their children while they send the children of the poor home, even after asking the kids to report for school resumption.
That's true. I mean, if you look at the former governor of Zamfara, Yerima, who got himself you know, a 13-year-old girl took her hostage and claimed that she was his wife. I put the question to the man. Will you give your 12 or 13-year-old girl to a 45-year-old man?
Question. You know?
So, you know, by the way, can I quickly say before the next call comes in, what Pastor Oladipo was saying is quite right. She's quite right there.
Mm.
That in developed countries, the venue of political meeting has to be public, known, safe, and accessible. This idea of having meeting in the, you know, one corner owned by a political chieftain at 2 a.m. is not allowed in developed countries.
Yeah.
It has to be held in the town hall, the community center.
Yeah.
You know, you rent somewhere in the middle of town.
Mm.
And that meeting has to hold, say, between 10 a.m. and 7 p.m.
Mm.
So everybody can participate. Nobody should be looking for the meeting. Here, sometimes they do primary. Even some member of the party don't know the venue.
Yeah. Oh, dear. So, all right. Let's get back to the phone lines. Let's see who we have here. Hello and good evening.
Hello, good evening.
All right. Please kindly turn off the device you're listening with so we don't pick the feedback.
Can you hear me, sir?
We hear you clearly now. Your name, please, and where you're calling from.
Okay, my name is Monday.
Monday, good.
Yes, I'm calling from Osborne.
All right, Monday.
I'm actually on the transit.
Good, please go ahead.
So, please, you mentioned the issue of that clock 84, subsection 12, am I right?
Yes, yeah, let me mention, yeah.
Okay, sir, please.
Yeah.
You know, let me say something clearly.
Mm.
Nigerians are hearing that man, that so-called man, Malami, whatever he feels like he wants to do, this is his time.
Mm.
Thank God that his tenure is coming to an end.
Mm.
Anything he does now, he will suffer for it.
Mm.
Nigerians are waiting
please.
For him.
No.
So
everything, whatever they like,
language,
let them do.
Yeah.
Hello, sir.
Yeah, you have to be cautious of your language also too. You know, I mean, we may not like Malami, but to threaten, no. So let's do this, Rotimi. I have this message here, and I think it's good we take it also too. This is Chinedu from Ijebu Ode. He says, "I will tell you a personal story about this topic. I graduated from University of UNIZIC. Nnamdi Azikiwe University in 2012 with an extra year in electrical engineering with second class lower honors. Now we know what you came out with. One of the best graduating students of my set in my department in computer engineering was a lady. And even though I had a grudging respect for her, especially in a department like engineering, someone said a funny feeling was like it came into my subconscious. So a lady really dusted us in engineering. So what is it, my male ego playing with my mind? I really can't say either way. The fact is that a lot of men feel they're entitled to be in power, inheritance, etc. Let me be the first to say that it's a very wrong notion and view. If anything, women have proven to be even more intellectually superior. Well, you're not the first person. Many people have said it. Let's hear from a woman now. Hello and good evening.
Well, hi, good evening.
Excellent. What's your name, please, and where are you calling from?
Okay, my name is Nena. I'm calling from Estelo.
All right, Nena, please go ahead.
I just want to tell you a story of something that happened. So on my street, there was this woman. She walked into a shop where I was. There were a few other women there.
Right.
And she came in with two of her children, like a 7-year-old boy and a 3-year-old girl.
Mm.
Both of them didn't greet anybody there.
Mm.
So I asked the woman, "Madam, did you not teach your children to greet?" Then she spanked her little girl and said, "Nah, come on, greet."
Mm.
And I was like, and the boy, you could see the air of, would I call it arrogance, coming from the boy. And she just told me, "No, that one is a guy. He does not greet."
Mm.
I said, "You see, this is why we have scattered our country, scattered all our boys that have turned into men that are arrogant and think that they are more superior to women."
Mm.
And she said, "That is true." I said, "Your son is going to greet everybody here now and he's not going to do it with any type of rudeness. And she talked to him and made him grieve. I don't know, but I just feel like this upbringing, I don't know if where we can start to talk to our mothers to raise the sons better. I don't know if churches, I don't know where, but this information needs to go to our mothers. They need to raise our sons, love them and raise them, not only the girls.
Thank you very much, ma'am. And great point you make there. I think, Rotimi, we can take in our final call because we're out of time. Sorry, do call back. Hello and good evening.
Hello, Rotimi. Good evening, Ayogo.
Great to have you join us. What's your name, please, and where are you calling from?
My name is Ayo. I'm calling from Ijanike.
All right, Ayo, let's do it very quickly.
Yeah, I want to call our attention to something. I think science has succeeded in proving that when you have a male intelligent child and a female intelligent child, there's a high tendency that the female child will be more intelligent than the male child. And if you put them in classes, I have been in classroom for 20 years teaching. It's always difficult to find three female students who are academically intelligent to follow themselves in class, like first, second, third. But you can have three male students who can do that in a single class. But when you find one who is a female, who is that intelligent, if she's 90%, the followers will be 70%. They are always exceptional when you find one intelligent one. And I think if the environment is contributing to, I mean, science has proven this, the environment now should try as much as possible to see what we can do to encourage more female students.
Right.
Because
very well said.
What I realized in the North, it's not religious, rather it is cultural, because Islam itself said, if you train a female child, you get the reward of training seven different persons. I think the attitude to female child in the northern Nigeria is not as a result of the religion, rather it is cultural to them.
And a great way for us to end the discussion. Very well said. Thank you very much for all of you who called in and sent in messages on WhatsApp. I see several messages. Tony Alabama, I see you. We must teach. We must let African countries learn a lesson that you have to give the women the opportunity to be more productive, and then you see societies develop. Thank you. For those of you, you can listen to this again on nigeriainfo.fm. I see someone asking. nigeriainfo.fm. Go on the website. You see, listen again. It's a podcast of all our shows. You see Public Square there, so you can listen to this episode and previous episodes also too. Write me a parting shot.
Yeah, well, can I just say that, you know, girl children often are compelled to cook, sweep, wash alongside their education. And it impacts on educational outcomes. So that's what the science says. I wasn't able to follow a lot of what the last caller said, but I think it's trying to make the good point that when girl children have to cook, wash, sweep, fresh water, and so forth, alongside their studies, it affects them.
Very true. Very true.
All right. Well, thanks, everybody. Join us again next Friday, 4 p.m. And if you have any questions, you can always ask. I'm at Rotimi Sankore on Twitter. Aho is at Ahohobo.
Right. And that's what we do and how we do it on the Public Square. And we have a big Nations Cup game, World Cup qualifier game coming up between Nigeria and Ghana. And fantastic crews already on ground, and they will take you through all of the matches. There are about five games, I think, happening today, which will decide Africa's qualifiers for the World Cup. So don't go anywhere, beginning from 6 p.m. 99.3 Nigeria Info. Let's talk.